The world in general, and people in particular, are obsessed with being happy. Great attempts are made to remove hardship from our lives. Sometimes we'll go through great lengths even to remove the smallest ache and pain or the smallest obstacle in our life to really being able to be content and happy. We have in our mind the idea that suffering is inherently bad, that life somehow, if we just strive hard enough, if we just find the right solutions, the right answers, the right formulas, that life can be easy. If every person could just be happy and have an easy life, we'd have the perfect world. We'd have this kind of utopia. There's a couple problems with this, the least of which is not that it goes against the teachings of Jesus and the very understanding of suffering that we find in the Bible. But the second problem is that it's impossible. There's no way to make everyone happy. There's really no way for us to be consistently happy in life, to be pleased with the way things are always going. We know that evil exists in this world. And even if evil didn't exist, in trying to have everybody live a happy life, we'd probably find that one person's idea of happiness runs into someone else's idea of happiness, and if one of those people is happy, the other can't be. We see this sometimes, just to pick one issue, around smoking, right? Someone feels that their life is happy, they're content, it makes them feel good to smoke. Someone else feels that happiness is living, breathing air that doesn't have smoke in it. And those two ideas of happiness run into each other. But I also think sometimes as human beings, I'm not sure we really have the ability to be content or happy with everything that happens in our lives. If we listen to people, there's a lot of complaining that goes on, isn't there? And this problem of not being happy, of complaining, of being discontented, reaches into many areas of our lives. One area is the area of finance, the pursuit of money and the parallel pursuit of material things. It may actually be the first place that people look to find happiness and contentment. And yet, we know on some hand, on some way, inside of us, that no amount of money, no amount of material possessions is going to make us happy. How do I know this? Because if you had just received a raise from whatever it was you were working, maybe you're on Social Security even, and you get a raise in your Social Security, how many of you would turn down another raise the following month? None of us would, right? Because it's never enough, right? We'll always take more, somehow thinking if we have more, you can pay your pastor more. Oh, wait, no. If you have more, that life will be easier. If anyone ever thinks that, please let me know, because I will give you the biggest kiss on the cheek, of course. But I don't want to look up to see who laughed. Sometimes we look for happiness in money and material possessions. But I never hear anybody not complain about wishing they had more. It also seems like we have the inability to be content with our government. Even though in America, we have probably as much say in our government as any country in the world. We're allowed to vote in primaries that narrow down candidates from a particular party. And then we're able to vote in a general election which picks one candidate over the other to serve, whether it's president or whether it's a representative or a senator on the national level, on the state level. We even have say in who our local government officials are. And yet with all this privilege we have, we never seem to be happy with whoever it is that we put into office. If you follow the news, we hear all the time about approval ratings or disapproval ratings or the difference between the approval rating and the disapproval rating. Despite our involvement in government, we never seem to be fully happy with what's happening. Now, I don't want you to think that I believe those in Washington should be able to do whatever they want to do and not be held accountable. We don't need to just sit back and do nothing to change our government, to help them function better, to help them hold the common good up and to seek peace and justice. But the problem arises when we think that our happiness, our contentment is going to come through government. If only we can elect the right people, that somehow life will be easy, life will be grand, and we can get on to worrying about other things. In spite of sometimes our longing to find the perfect candidates, I don't think that no matter who serves in our elected office, that that's really the key to contentment and happiness. Sometimes we seek contentment and happiness from other people as well, from our relationships. Two people meet and fall in love, and it seems as if they don't have a care in the world. This is especially true of newlyweds. You can often, and I don't care what age, I've seen 70-year-old newlyweds, you can tell they were just married. They can be sitting across the table at dinner, and you can tell they are newlyweds. It's not only how they act towards each other, but it's that twinkle in their eye, that glow. They might as well have just married stamped across their foreheads. And many of them in that moment are content and are happy. They don't need anything else in life except for each other at that point in time. But one only needs to look at the rise in divorce rates or in surveys about marital contentment to know that true happiness can't necessarily come from our relationships, whether our married relationships, our friendships, our family relationships. Because people are probably going to find a way to let us down. It's not that relationships can't be good, but if we seek our happiness through someone else, we run the risk of being disappointed. I think the inability to truly be happy also carries over into church. Not just this church, but any church. And I think it's shocking to some because where is the one place that you think we could be the happiness? It would be in church, in worship, among God's people, among those who share the same beliefs we do. The church constantly puts out the cry to the world, come to us and we can meet your needs and fix your problems. And maybe that's the first mistake we make, seeing the church as just another way to live an easy life, to be content, to be happy. If your marriage isn't working, if you don't have enough material goods, if government isn't doing what it needs to be done to fix your life, come to the church and we'll fix it for you. And people do come. And there are times, as many of us know, where needs can be met and people can find stability in life and can find a life better with the church than they had previously without it. They make new friends and they can learn a lot of things. They can develop a deeper relationship with God. There's no reason that we should not be happy in church, and yet we find ways to not be happy in church. Attendance figures for the past few decades indicate that church attendance is down as a whole. Even those people who claim to be Christians stays the same or in some surveys has even increased. And for those of us that continue to come to church, we find ways to not be content, don't we? Seems to be something about us, we're just hard to please as people. And I saw some wives shaking their heads, and some husbands too. But we can be hard to please as people. Even though we know there's something about church that makes life better, we can complain about the music that is sung, or the pastor's sermon, or anything we want to find to complain about. There's all sorts of ways that we exhibit and we admit that real happiness, total happiness, real contentment doesn't come from church, from what happens there, from the people there. If we seek happiness in a particular pastor, we're probably going to be let down. We all know people who hop from one church to the next, seeking that church that's going to be the right one for them where they can really be happy. So if we are so hard to please, if all these things aren't the pathway to contentment, to real happiness, what do? I think one of the things we can think about is there is a difference between being happy and being blessed. And maybe even in trying to be happy, we're seeking the wrong thing. We're seeking the wrong outcome. Our psalmist this morning, the author of Psalm 84, seemed to provide at least one answer to our question. One answer to where true blessing comes from. Not from material wealth, or from the government, or from finances, or even from finding the right church or the right pastor or singing the right songs. But it comes from God's presence. That somehow in this psalm, as I shared with our youth this morning, that it is God's presence that is the one thing that we can count on. God's presence may not make us always happy. You may come here on a Sunday morning with incredible problems in your life, and you may leave here with those same problems. But somehow the psalmist captured an idea that as long as he could be in God's presence, that somehow those other things would be made okay. Maybe not erased. Maybe it's just a matter of perspective. Maybe it's just a matter of knowing that God is in control when everything else seems out of control. I want to read Psalm 84 to you again. And you can hear it in your own context. Hear it in your own pursuit for contentment and happiness. Hear it in the midst of your own complaints about whatever it is in life that you're not happy about. But place yourself in this psalmist's place. Going up the mountain, at the top is the temple, the very house of God. You can almost see him not just walking, but trying to run up the hill, tired from a long journey, tired from the burdens of life, but longing and striving to be where he knows God is. How lovely is your temple, O Lord of the armies of heaven. I long, yes, faint with longing, to be able to enter your courtyard and come near to the living God. Even the sparrows and the swallows are welcome to come and nest among your altars, and there they have their young. O Lord of heaven's armies, my King and my God, how happy are those who can live in your temple, singing your praises. Blessed are those who are strong in the Lord, who want above all else to follow your steps. When they walk through the valley of weeping, it will become a place of springs where pools of blessing and refreshment collect after rains. They will grow constantly in strength, and each of them is invited to meet with the Lord in Zion. Jehovah, God of the heavenly armies, hear my prayer. Listen, God of Israel. O God, our defender and our shield, have mercy on the one you have anointed as your king. A single day spent in your temple is better than 1,000 anywhere else. I would rather be a doorman in the temple of the Lord my God than live in palaces of wickedness. For Jehovah God is our light and our protector. He gives us grace and glory. No good thing will he withhold from those who walk his paths. O Lord of the armies of heaven, blessed are those who trust in you. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.